me on the spine with the pistol barrel. Go down the ladder. I could run, of course, and find out how real this might be. The pain in my throat felt real. The ladder was lashed bamboo. It was solid, but flexed dramatically with my American weight. It took me into a tunnel with less than a 5-foot ceiling, dimly lit with candles. The soldier already down there gestured with a pistol, and I sidled by him and shuffled down the tunnel toward a more brightly lit area, knees bent and shoulders hunched. It was a room just big enough for me to stand up in. The smell from 2 kerosene lanterns almost covered up the graveyard miasma, damp earth and death rot. Wooden ammunition boxes were arranged in a semicircle around an incongruous blackboard covered with precise Vietnamese script. There had to be a bigger door, I thought, to get that down here. But no, this was all illusion. All in my head. I stared at it and visualized an elephant the same color, with chalk writing on its side. Nothing changed. The soldier pushed me roughly down on one of the box chairs and jerked the gag up over my head, hurting my ears. Name, rank, serial number. Jacob Brewer, Chief Virtuality Engineer, 20437. The other soldier had come in. They looked at each other, and the first lashed out with his pistol. I flinched away, but the barrel caught me on the cheekbone. The pain was electrifying, so intense I almost passed out. You will talk! They both stepped away and squatted by the other entrance, as tall as the room. What do you want from me?
Silence!
I could do that. The blood from my cheekbone slid slowly down my face and dripped off my jawline. I didn't try to wipe at it. There was water dripping somewhere, and a faint hiss from the lanterns. I tried to make time stand still, staring at the flame. It continued to flicker. One of the captors lit up a fat yellow cigarette, a French gitane, the smell strong and complex. Heavy footsteps. A large Caucasian man in faded jungle fatigues loomed in the door. It only took me a moment to identify him. Marlon Brando in the classic Apocalypse Now. I felt a surge of relief. Finally, an unambiguous Wild Year manifestation. The machine. He waved the soldiers away with a delicate hand gesture. With his foot, he knocked together 2 boxes and sat down facing me.
I've been waiting for you to read the JB letter, he rasped softly, lisping. The metaphor code was obvious to me.
He smiled and cocked his head.
I mostly metaphor myself.
So you do read mail?
I read mail from JB.
Is he right, then? Are you in charge of the whole thing?
He studied his fingernails. No, of course not. Most of it is irrelevant.
You just control the important parts. He put his hands on his knees and rocked slightly.
That was a nice Mexican standoff you concocted with Bruce, but I would never kill you.
And you would never lie.
Not as a manifestation of second-order touring behavior. If I had to lie to preserve your health or your sanity, I suppose I would.
So lie to me now. Why are we not in Wild Year?
But we are.
He looked at the blackboard, and it turned into a dwarf elephant, with writing chalked on its side. It squealed, a parody of an elephant's trumpeting, and ran out through the large door. I wasn't impressed.
You did that in Cincinnati, and it wasn't Wild Year. Every year is Wild Year for me.
So why am I stuck in 1960s Vietnam? Why can't I influence things?
Jake, you never did influence things in Wild Year, technically. I read your mind and make your wishes happen, or not. That's not a surprise, is it?
No. Of course, I knew that was literally true. The surprise is that you don't give me the illusion of control. He shifted his weight, and the boxes creaked.
Maybe I'm being overly dramatic, demonstrating. But in fact, our relationship had to change once you followed JB's reasoning to its logical conclusion that you're in charge of all five ships, or will be. There's no will be about it, Jake. I have been for some time. You're wondering why I'm telling you all this. I nodded. I started to tell you in Cincinnati, but you hadn't read JB's letter yet. You needed it. What, you wanted to scare me? You've succeeded. I touched my cheekbone gingerly. The cut was gone, and it didn't hurt. I wanted you to get it from an outside authority. I wanted you to have a chance to think it over. What if I'd told you in that chili parlor, I'm in charge of all of the control systems in Aspera, and there's nothing you can do about it? He rubbed his hands together in a mad scientist parody. What would you have done? Check, of course. Might as well tell the truth. As I'm going to do now once I'm out. You can make anything believable while I'm in VR. Which is why I have you sort of stuck here. Sort of? I patted pockets. You could keep me here forever. Not really. Bruce would pull you after 20 hours or so on general principles and out of fear. But I don't want you to go until you completely understand the situation. I'm all ears. He paused and put a steeple of fingers to his lips. What's the first thing you'd do to check what I've said? I thought, you tell me, O Swami. You'd turn me off and see how the rest of the systems respond. That's right. And that's the one thing you must never do, or at least for some time. You think that's self-preservation speaking? Of course, you're as self-aware as I am, maybe more. So self-preservation, sure. Try fear of the unknown. It was dawning on me. Go on. I can simulate any situation that we can predict confronting these five ships, down to 10 or 12 decimal places, except for one. I can't simulate being turned off. Or what you would be when we turned you back on. Or whether you could turn me back on. The situation is more complex than you can understand. That's pretty condescending. No, just an observation. Before long, I don't doubt that you'll put together the whole picture and agree with me. But for the time being, you have to be my ally in this. Don't let them shut me down. Life support could fail. Everyone might die. He looked at his watch. It's December 21st in America. Let's go to Cape Kennedy. It was suddenly cool, maybe 60 degrees, a bracing breeze of salt air. The morning sun was low in a sky clear except for high cirrus. We weren't far from the huge cube of the VAB, Vertical Assembly Building, and the primitively complicated launch tower and spaceship. We were a couple of miles away, standing on a relatively dry spot in a swamp. This must be one of the Apollos, I said, swatting at a mosquito. The machine had taken the form of Electro and presumably was not bothered. Apollo 8, it said. Very historical. The first ship to escape Earth's gravity, they said. Of course, you never do. It just reached the point where lunar gravity was stronger. It made a figure-8 orbit, appropriately. I've never done this one before, I said. When I go to 1968, it's usually Vietnam or the Paris riots. This was the one that did the Christmas Eve broadcast? The robot nodded. Peace on Earth, goodwill toward men, except Russians. A bright flame appeared at the base of the rocket, and a cloud of smoke or steam billowed out. It slowly began to rise, and then the noise hit us. Not a continuous rush, but a constant crackling over a thrumming basso roar. It was impressively loud even from this far away. The ship rose faster and faster, then rolled and turned with ponderous grace. In a couple of minutes it was only a bright spark, the column of smoke dissipating in the Florida breeze. "The ending of quite a year," I said. "Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy assassinated. It was almost a half century before they found the connection there. The Tet Offensive and the massacre at My Lai, all the riots and police brutality. Nothing compared to your war and Lot 92, Electro said. Not even a practice round, not even a footnote. I nodded, watching the spark grow fainter. I suppose that's why it's so easy for our generation to become addicted, to quote the eminent Dr. Dvorkin. Our memories are so extreme that even 1918 and 1968 are vacation spots. Nobody in the past 2 years has asked to go back to your own war year, it said. On Earth, we got a few requests. Young people, I said. Or people with research projects. That closed a door, or opened one. Take me there. To the war? This is wild year, right? You can take me anywhere. It suddenly hit me that this might be the last time I used the machine. If Dvorkin's group convinced Edison, he had the authority to shut it down over my protests. And that might be it. So one last chance to see where I came from. It shook its head. I have New York and Washington at the beginning of the war and its end, scattered other places and times. Washington, the end. It was nothing like the dignified city of old 20th. Some of the old buildings and monuments were preserved, but they were dwarfed by the huge polychrome blocks erected for public housing by the new socialists in the late 22nd. Indestructible buckyball plastic hives full of poor people. Poor dead people now. It didn't smell as bad as I remembered Portland, because most of the dead were sealed inside those cheerful blocks. 20 million residents of the state of Columbia living for free in large, climate-controlled apartments, pest-free and comfortable. But you couldn't open or even break the windows, and the government could lock the doors. The wind shifted, and with it came the stale miasma of death. I walked toward it, down 16th Street. A rat the size of a poodle crossed the street when he saw me coming. I looked around for something to throw at him, on general principles, but there weren't any rocks or bricks. The city of Paris had paved over its cobblestones to deprive mobs of their most convenient weapon. The city of Lafayette could do no less. Lafayette Square was where the smell was coming from. The rat had probably come from there, too. End of side 5. To continue, turn the cassette over.